Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, there is nothing in all of sports, popular culture, maybe even politics, as toxic as the WNBA, and whoever thought we would get to that point. But I guess it's better than where things were. I don't know. We'll talk about that and much more on the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. If you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And let's just get right down to it. The conversation around the league we're taping Tuesday. Yesterday, June 3rd, 2024, a day that will live in ESPN history, quite possibly the dumbest day ever in the history of Bristol, Connecticut. Pat McAfee, wow. What do you even say about Pat? You know, Pat McAfee is a very, very lucky guy. He can get away with pretty much anything. And in his defense of Caitlin Clark yesterday, he referred to her in a fashion that I'm sure she's been referred to on the court this season, but probably not something you can say as a man on national television on a Disney property. Stephen A. Smith,
who's done more for women's sports than me?
Yeah, right. Because nobody upon nobody was talking about the WNBA on the regular ESPN shows 3 years ago. That started to change a little bit last year when they shoehorn in segments where you were pretty reasonably sure the people talking about the league didn't watch a single game. I've mentioned this before, but when Wilbon last year was talking about how the Liberty were playing in front of a mausoleum or whatever, and the Liberty have one of the most raucous crowds in the league, it's like, you know, that at a certain point when you're being talked about, but the people who are talking about you don't actually care, it's kind of a waste of everybody's time. Just a red letter day at ESPN. Yes. You know, I'll bring you in a moment, Drew, but of course it'd be foolish to pretend this is just ESPN. This is a cultural meltdown that's been weeks in the making. You can go back to those comments by Sonny Hostin on The View. You can go back to any number of internet comments. People who are like, well, I'm only watching for Caitlin. You better protect the golden goose or else I'm going to leave. It's like, well, you weren't there for 27 years and the league survived. The WNBA, realistically, I don't think that I really don't think the viewership growth this season is worth what we're seeing. I actually don't. But Drew, I'll bring you in on that note.
You know, I was doing my absolute best yesterday to tune all of this out.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, for me, I was enjoying the French Open. You know, I was enjoying golf's longest day. You know, that's a personal favorite of mine. But this was impossible to avoid if you have a Twitter account. And I think it's really telling when you have, you know, well, going back to the McAfee point and what he said, you have, you know, Fox News and Jemele Hill agreeing essentially, and both sides saying that it is not okay, albeit for much, much different reasons. That is surely a unique thing to see.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the discourse around all this, John, and I don't want to wade too far into what actually happened on the court to Caitlin Clark and you know, the whole racial component to this, because I think it's played out. This is, you know, everyone has their opinion, and there's people that are more eloquent than me that can discuss that, right? But when it comes to ESPN's role in this, Pat McAfee, Stephen A. Mm-hmm. For Stephen A., the fact that he finds himself as a kingmaker in all of this is really weird to me, because it took him so long at ESPN to get to the place where he's at. He understands that, sure, he's the top dog now, but you know that takes time to build. And the fact that he, for lack of a better term, it doesn't seem like he remembers where he came from, right? When he's acting like the way he is. And let's not act like he's been talking about women's sports for very long. He talks about it, you know, when it's convenient for him. And, you know, that's pretty obvious. The one other thing I'll say, and you talk about the WNBA's viewership.
Yeah.
Trying to unpack some of that nice monologue you had there, John. When it comes to the WNBA viewership aspect of it, I think you're right where it's starting to matter less. But when your discourse is so divisive, like it is right now with the WNBA, I actually, not to go off on too much of a tangent here, but I saw a pretty accurate tweet from Alexi Lalas, which I know another controversial figure, but this is a pretty, you know, I think this is on the money here. Soccer for the longest time has these peaks and valleys, right? You know, every 4 years you get a World Cup and you bring a lot of people into the tent. But the goal here is not to keep everybody in the tent, right? Everyone that is joining the WNBA hype train for Caitlin Clark is not going to stay in the tent, but you want to keep some of them. Right. And if you're able to attract more than you had before, if you're able to raise the floor of your product, like the WNBA hopefully will with Caitlin Clark, that's the goal. I think all the haters and all the people that are saying they're going to leave and don't kill the golden goose, they're not going to be WNBA fans long term anyway.
Well, they're not WNBA fans now.
Sure. Yeah. Another adage here that I think is pretty accurate would be all publicity is good publicity. For the WNBA, a league that was not talked about very much before Caitlin Clark, now it's getting talked about on cable news and The View and you know ESPN and all that, every podcast. I think it helps the league overall.
All publicity is not good publicity. I counter that. I don't believe that that's true anymore, because ultimately you don't need publicity to get rights fee increases and all these other things.
You don't think that all this makes the WNBA a more attractive property for any network out there that's looking to get into the WNBA business? I mean, I think it does.
I would say this. I would say that obviously the WNBA getting these kinds of numbers is a good thing. But ultimately, we're talking about viewership that is very specific to one player. We all know Caitlin is by far the biggest draw. By far. She's a bigger draw than anyone. Bigger draw than Angel Reese, Asia Wilson, Dana Taurasi. If you wanted to argue that anyone was a bigger draw than Caitlin Clark, you'd have to go back to the days of Cynthia Cooper, at least in the WNBA's history. So, and realistically, that was more a function of the times than anything else. It was just easier to get big seven-figure audiences back then. Having said that, obviously the WNBA to me would be growing even without Caitlin. It would be growing at a much lower level. It would be growing in a way that would not capture a lot of national attention. It probably still wouldn't be getting to a seven-figure audience, but the league's viewership has been growing. What happened with Caitlin Clark, it's almost like a kid who's having a normal growth spurt and then they grow 2 feet. You know, that's not good. Like that's a problem. There's a certain amount of growth that happens that is not healthy, right? It's too much, too soon, and too many people who don't care about your product. If I'm Kathy Engelbert, I don't want Fox News. I don't want The View. I don't want Stephen A. I don't want McAfee. I don't even want Jemele Hill. If I'm Kathy Engelbert, I want the people who wear Caitlin Clark jerseys to games, the little kids in particular, the young generation who's watching because they think she's awesome. I want Steph Curry's fans. And Caitlin has a lot of Steph Curry's fans. We've talked about it before on the pod. There are kids enthralled to Steph Curry. And it's the same thing with Caitlin. That's what I want.
You're obviously right. You want to attract the right audience. You don't want the detractors becoming a main part of the draw here, because then you're just turning yourself into pro wrestling. And obviously that's not what the WNBA wants. But was this contempt not the most predictable thing of all time? We're going to double and triple viewership for Caitlin Clark games from, you know, the average WNBA game last season, right? Obviously it was going to get toxic, right? Like this is a slow time in sports.
Yeah.
There's not much to talk about. This incident happens where Caitlin Clark gets knocked down. I can't say I've watched enough of her games to know if she's getting knocked around consistently as much as people are saying she is. But
I don't even think it's unique to her. You know, one of the ironies, Angel Reese, who really needs to grow up about Caitlin Clark already, was applauding the hard foul. Angel Reese got horse collared by Jasmine Thomas the other day in a foul that was way more egregious than what Kennedy Carter did. So I think it's primarily Caitlin, but I don't think it's just Caitlin. I think there's a weird, totally unproductive resentment toward this rookie class by the existing players in the league. And I wanted to deny it, but it's kind of hard to deny. And I actually think the Jasmine Thomas foul is a bigger indicator of that than even what Kennedy Carter did. Hey, you know what? I'm not going to tell anybody how to feel about the fact that they've been toiling in obscurity and mockery and dealing with all of that. And all of a sudden, Johnny Come Lately comes in, and now people are tuning in and making it very clear when they're tuning in that they're only tuning in for those rookies. It's disrespectful. Now, is it totally unfair and unproductive to take it out on the rookies? Yeah. And totally wrong of veterans to do that. But whatever. I can't tell people how to react.
So weird cultural moment. Just briefly, before we move on to another topic, which hopefully is much more fun to talk about. Where do we go from here for Pat McAfee? I mean, yeah. Is this like where is the line? Because I know we've had this exact conversation on the podcast. Like, where is the line for him when it comes to what he can say on his podcast? I know he apologized, but, you know, later the same day, he literally went on Monday Night Raw and made a joke about it, said the same thing when a wrestler came on. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, how long is ESPN going to deal with this? They paid him so freaking much money.
Burke Magnus is not John Skipper. And John Skipper was terrified to have Robert Lee do a game, which in retrospect, at the time and in retrospect, was ridiculous. Burke Magnus is not the same guy. And I think the ESPN he's running is way more, you know, loose when it comes to this kind of stuff. I think they recognize, I think there's a faction at ESPN that likes that Pat said that and got away with it, which is to say, hey, the for lack of a better word here, you know, this is one of those words that just one of the worst words in the English language now, but the woke era is over. We've got Pat. You can come back now. You can come back, right? That's their message to the Pat McAfee audience. And, you know, look, hey, whatever. I think Pat ultimately is pretty safe. He joked about Larry Nassar, which is way more indefensible than this. Me personally, I think it was born again energy. What did I talk about months ago with Caitlin Clark? That born again energy among people who've never cared about women's basketball before, but now they are experts and feel passionately about it. There's nothing worse than passionate intensity. I mean, in basketball and on the court or whatever, it's probably good. But just in general, and I'm probably bringing a little passionate intensity myself, there's just nothing worse than that because it always takes people to a point beyond where they need to go. Just make your point, right? Pat could have easily made that exact same point without going to any of the directions that he went to. But he let his passionate intensity take him over. Yeah. I actually think ESPN's got a bigger problem with Stephen A. Stephen A was sunning Monica McNutt. Jaylen Brown the other day was talking about, he said, Miles Turner, you know, he's a good kid, but Miles Turner's older than Jaylen Brown, right? That's what I'm talking about. Like when LeBron would used to refer to Kyrie as the kid, you are belittling them. And that's what he was doing to Monica McNutt. Monica McNutt, I'd heard of Monica McNutt before she did First Take, right? She does work for MSG in New York. So Stephen A was being really ridiculous with that. Stephen A really does think very highly of himself. I guess you can't blame someone for thinking highly of themselves when the executives seem to be so enthralled to them. But, Pat McAfee seems to have more humility than Stephen A, and that's saying something.
It's so strange, John. And I struggle to even want to talk about it because, what we kind of opened the show with, I don't care. I like talking about how unimportant these daily, you know, these morning television shows on ESPN are and how unprofitable they are. But the sad thing is they still drive the narrative so much on social media and, you know, for other sports programming. It's almost like any morning news show. They are kind of the agenda setters still. and there is a legitimate role that they play in that. But man,
there's never been a single honest word ever said on that show. First Take, not even one. And I know, okay, that's not 100% true, because you know every now and again Kellerman would give you a little something. But one of the most contrived 2 hours of television there has ever been.
Let's close this topic with one that it's a bit adjacent to what we're talking about. You brought up the Olympics. Is she even going to be on the plane ride to France? Because I think that's going to be the conversation, right? With her performance thus far in the WNBA, she's been good, but she's been inconsistent, right? Would that be a fair assessment, John?
She did have just 3 points the other day. I don't necessarily, I was saying months ago that she deserved to be on the team. Is she one of the 15 best players? I don't necessarily think that she is. The WNBA will be off during the Olympics for about 6 weeks or so, something like that. And she has played, all these rookies have played an inordinate amount of basketball this year. So I absolutely think she, it would be a good thing for everybody to turn the temperature down for a little while. You know, if it gets to a point where Caitlin Clark games are averaging 800,000 viewers or something, that's the happy medium, where that's still much better than the WNBA was doing, but you don't have this foolishness that follows her everywhere she goes. This is like LeBron after the decision. This is like Tiger after the infidelity. I mean, it is that level of just absolute trash right now.
All right, let's move on to the NBA. You know, when I'm thinking about this series, John, it's just like, for me, and it's, you probably have a different opinion, but it's just kind of pure apathy.
Really? You know,
yes. And that's because, on the one hand, the Celtics are there, and I actually like the Celtics. Out, you know, I think most people outside of Boston, they're not into rooting for the Celtics. I kind of am. I like the history there. I like watching games in the Garden. Like, you know, these are things that are attractive to me. But when I think of Dallas, like, I just have no feeling, right? Like, Luka's a star that's fun to watch, but the fact that he's paired with Kyrie just kind of makes it like, you know, I don't really want to root for him.
Oh,
Mark Cuban sold the team now. So, you know, there's no interest even from a Mark Cuban angle for me. And as a casual NBA observer, that's actually kind of important. And, you know, for whatever reason, I think this playoffs just hasn't locked me in as much as it normally would. I've been more apt to just, you know, be watching, you know, the French Open or the golf, or, you know, getting excited for U.S. Olympic qualifiers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's just other sports that have, you know, taken my time other than the NBA this off or this postseason. And, you know, so my prevailing thought going into this series is that it's just kind of there for me.
Interesting. You know, I don't really know how this series is going to do. I think that it's not a bad matchup. You know, I mean, Dallas has a superstar in Luka Doncic. It has Kyrie, who I can certainly understand if there are people who are holding a grudge with Kyrie. I mean, I understand it. But, you know, he's been on his best behavior, has not been doing any of that Kanye stuff for about a year now. And to me, you know, he's playing spectacularly well. So I look at Kyrie as more of a positive in this series, because obviously he hit one of the biggest shots in finals history and has a fan base. So you have Luka, you have Kyrie, you have a big market in Dallas, although market who, you know, not that important. I think it is a top 10, market finals. It's certainly more attractive than Denver, Miami.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, from that perspective, you would assume better viewership. Now, what I will say is a lot of it will depend, of course, on the quality of the series. There has not been a 7-game NBA Finals in 8 years. There's not been a 7-game NBA or Stanley Cup or Major League Baseball title series since 2019, longest gap in a while. So obviously a series that goes 6 will have an advantage over last year when it went 5. And obviously a series that goes 7 will be very much, you know, in good shape. I'm not expecting big gains. I've said consistently that I thought that this year's finals would be the most watched since 2019, and I still think so, but I think it'll be incremental. Last year, game one was a 6 rating and 11.6 million viewers. Maybe this year's game one is 11.8 million. Like, I don't even necessarily know it'll get out of that 11, you know, range. to 12. So last year's finals averaged 11.6 million. The previous year was 12.4. Do I think this year's finals could get to, you know, 12.6 million viewers? Pretty easily. Yeah, I think it could get there. You know, 2022 was a weird finals because it was, you know, Golden State and Boston, but didn't do very well. But I do think 2022 was still part of that COVID hangover. You could kind of see it. The Warriors did not draw nearly as well that year as they did the following year. So, you know, I think that there was still some COVID hangover in 22. And I would say this year's series should do better than Denver-Miami. I mean, Denver-Miami is one of the least attractive finals in NBA history, and it certainly lived down to the expectations. So I think, you know, if this series is close, you get a classic game one, you know, close competitive games, close competitive series. I don't see any reason why the finals should not get to at least 12.5 million viewers. I don't think that's a lot to ask, and 12.5 million would be the most in 5 years.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week. Now at Menards.
Save big money at
Yeah, that's pretty incredible to say that 12.5 is the most in 5 years. But of course, you had those two and, like you said, maybe even 3 years that were really down, you know, a couple under 10 million during COVID. And then, you know, the 12.5 or 12.4-ish for Golden State and Boston.
Yeah, and just expectations are different now. You know, I mean, the World Series had 9 million viewers. And frankly, I think looking back, I don't think that was so bad. I think the record low audience of the World Series, I don't look at that and go, wow, what a terrible audience. I say, it makes sense for that matchup. It just happened to be a record low. But I mean, at this point, as I said, I'm not sure the ratings matter that much. The NBA's, you know, so what you used to see happen was a network would lose rights and they'd start talking about the ratings.
So our ratings were down. So we got rid of it.
It was a face-saving narrative. Ultimately, losing the rights is a failure. It's a failure of strategy to lose the rights 9 times out of 10, not always. And so you will see a lot of, oh, the ratings were bad, so we got out. We're much better off now with the Arena Football League. You know, look, I think even back then that narrative was wrong, but it was easy to kind of come to the conclusion that ratings were directly related to rights deals. And I think for a long time, there was a lot of evidence to that. You know, the NBA had very modest increases in its media rights in 2002 and then in 2007. And, you know, I think the fact that you're going to see, what is it, tripling? It's going to triple? And the ratings have been what they've been the last 5 years tells me that the industry is in a place where the ratings are less of a consideration than the tonnage of content and the ability to put programming on streaming services.
Well, I don't even think it's about tonnage or, you know, it is some about the streaming component, but I think it's more about timing, John. I think in the last, you know, for the last 2-3 sets of like major rights deals for the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, there's been a level of stability with the distribution of the sport, right? You're not going to put it anywhere other than a mix of cable and broadcast. And that was it. So the ratings, took on a greater importance. So you're going to put more focus on that. But now, at the end of cable's life cycle, let's say, and we don't know how long it's going to go on for, but, we all acknowledge that we're nearing the end. These rights take on a much increased importance, right? This is kind of the last gasp for a lot of cable networks. And that's why TNT has gone to the lengths they have to supposedly try to stretch their matching rights to meet whatever requirements possible so they can actually secure a deal at the end of this thing, because their value goes substantially down without NBA rights. I think if we were in an environment, John, where there was still stability when it came to the distribution of these games, stability in the cable ecosystem, the ratings would still matter somewhat, but now it's like a matter of life or death for these channels, and that's why, quite honestly, the leagues just have these media partners over a barrel.
Yeah, no, you make a great point. I mean, the fact is, the NBA very perfectly timed. I mean, who knows what the NFL would be getting if they were up right now?
Oh my gosh, like, could not be more perfectly timed. I think we should stress that, not be more perfectly timed.
And the thing is, the original thought was that the timing was bad, that, the NFL took all the money out of the market. Well, that was not true. Anytime people have thought that we've reached the point where, the bubble would burst, bubble hasn't burst yet. It'll burst eventually, and you don't want to be up for bid when that happens. But, look, the reality is that right now, there's still money. I mean, none of these, as long as the companies involved are Amazon, Disney, Comcast, the money is going to be there. Google, Apple, there's money available. And if they are interested, they will pay it. Now, if it was only the cable networks, only the WBDs and the Paramounts, that would be different. But as long as there are enormously lucrative businesses, who knows? Maybe OpenAI will get involved one of these days. Maybe they'll end up with programming that they create. I mean, we are heading into a very interesting stretch, because we've now fully involved the Silicon Valley tech stocks, the tech companies in the media rights ecosystem. So now the next thing is all the AI companies, right? NVIDIA's just a chip maker, right? There would never be any NVIDIA content, would there?
I don't think that would be within their wheelhouse. But, I wouldn't rule anything out with a company that large, right?
Yeah, I mean, why not? The NVIDIA streaming service, why not? If you've got the money, really, realistically, Netflix should not have the NFL. I mean, it's totally against what Netflix was. Netflix was DVDs through the mail. That red envelope, that's what it was. Now it's streaming Christmas Day NFL games? You couldn't have told me, if you had told me 15 years ago that there would be a time when Netflix would air NFL games, I'd say, how? They're going to send you a DVD through the mail that you'll put in and you'll see the NFL game? Like, I don't know. I wouldn't even know how that would work.
Now we're looking into the future a bit, and eventually, let's say 10 years from now, the cable channels aren't really players in this thing anymore. Well, do you think there's going to be a reset in the sports rights market? Because it's not like we've seen these tech companies, jumping in head first, wanting to splash all sorts of money into these leagues. They're paying, but it's strategic. It's right within kind of the realm of what these rights are actually worth. They're not going to go for an overpay like WBD with the NBA or Comcast. Even you can maybe say Amazon paying $1.8 billion for the C package is an overpay, but given what ESPN and whatever Comcast or WBD is going to pay, it in that context it looks pretty good.
Well, yeah, and I will say this. The timing, as you said, is perfect, because it's the beginning of streaming and the end of cable. So you have two sets of people that are willing to pay the money. The streamers are willing to pay the money for the content, and the cablers are desperate to keep what they have. And so you're saying, well, will there be a reset? How desperate will the cablers be in 11 years at the end of this NBA deal?
Well, will they even exist, right?
Yeah,
like, exactly. I think 2029 is really... that's the year to look at, because that's the year that the NFL can start rethinking their relationships and get out of their contracts if they wanted to. So
yeah,
then
but,
you're talking about Fox, CBS,
right?
WBD, if they're even still around. Those are the companies that really, they don't have the backing of big corporations, right? They don't have the backing of Disney or Comcast. So,
but I would point out that with the NFL, the two companies to watch are Fox and Paramount, which don't have NFL cable rights and don't really have a lot of investment in, sports on cable. I mean, CBS Sports Network, FS1 still obviously carries games, but the investment there, FS1 could go at any time, in my view. So I don't think the NFL is the one to watch, because really the only property that could lose anything is Disney. And I do think that ESPN will still be around in a factor.
Well, here's the thing, though. The NFL has the ability to essentially kill off the Fox and the CBS if they so choose. Let's say in 2029 that Google or Netflix wants a full package of games and they're willing to pay more than Fox or CBS can afford. I mean, there you go. That's it. The end of cable right there.
Yeah, but Fox and CBS are over the air. Now, it could be the case that Fox goes away. I think Fox could go away. Murdoch's 93, just got married.
Yeah.
Okay. I think once Murdoch is done doing what he's been doing, one way or the other, I don't know what the future of Fox is. I mean, is I don't know that the Murdoch son is as committed to this as his dad.
You'd have to get into the whole family trust and all of that, yeah. And who's going to vote with whom when it comes to control of the company. But that's a whole podcast series if we wanted to do that, watch Succession.
I'll tell you, because there was already a lot of rumor about Fox going being acquired by Amazon, Fox Broadcast Network, when the Disney deal was originally done, and that obviously went nowhere. But I could see the Fox Broadcast Network. I could see the Fox Broadcast Network going down. CBS has so much tradition. Fox goes back to 1986. We're not talking about the days of the Ed Sullivan Show. CBS goes back to, obviously the beginning of television, all the way back to radio. I can't see CBS dying out. CBS, obviously would be very damaged by the loss of the NFL, but it's, I don't think it would go away. Plus, honestly, CBS has a lot more stuff than Fox. I mean, they would still have the NCAA tournament. They've got PGA Tour. Fox really only has baseball other than the NFL, and those rights are going up in 2028. I mean, I really do think Fox is one to look at as something that could go away. Like, maybe we'll get to the point where there's no more Fox and no more Fox Sports. I could see that. Because, I mean, think about it. World Cup, MLB, NFL. There is a possibility that all of those are gone by 2029. And, I mean, Fox has no programming. CBS has 60 Minutes. They've got their, their sitcoms or whatever. Fox doesn't even have that. They're going to lose. Well, they will still have college football, so they'll still have some rights. They'll still have the Big Ten, and that goes into, I believe, the 30s.
It does.
So, to me, that I don't know if that's enough to keep a broadcast network alive, but certainly I would look at Fox as maybe being the one to go down. But I do think that
it's clear who the top dogs are, right? Yeah. Yeah, we know the top dogs are NBC / Comcast and Disney / ABC, ESPN, etc. For the other broadcast / cable operations out there, you're getting a little bit of sweat under the arms now. Yeah. You're kind of at the mercy of these tech companies and these leagues wanting to stay on your platforms. I don't know. It's going to be a really interesting next 5 years when it comes to how sports fans are ultimately going to be watching their games.
To bring it back to the original point of, well, what's going to happen, obviously the NBA, I don't think will ever triple its right fees again, because tripling from $75 billion is getting to now a ridiculous level, okay? I don't think the NBA will ever triple its rights fees again. I think there's probably one massive rights fee left in the current iteration of the industry, and that would be the one the NFL gets in 2029. I cannot see the NBA being able to pull this trick again. I mean, they'll probably maintain what they've got. But, I mean, it's just a lot to ask for. Now, maybe they'll get to $100 million, but they're not going to triple it or double it, I think, again.
Real quick before we move off this topic, is it somewhat irresponsible to say that the NBA is tripling their rights when in reality they're not. I mean, they're, and if we're talking about average annual value of the rights, it is not a triple. It might be more in line with like a bit over a double, because of the terms of the deals, right? It should be clear that over an 11-year term, right, the total amount of media revenue that the NBA will get from, you know, their domestic rights deals is a triple from their current deals.
Right. Well, I would say that on an annual basis, it's going to be maybe about $7 billion a year. Right now, it's about 2.7. So, you know, let's see. It's
between a double and a triple.
Right. I mean, you know, that's fair, but I mean, it's still a massive increase. And
yes.
You know, the point I'm making is they're not going to be able to do that again. They're not going to be able to go. They're not going to go from. They might go from $7 billion to $10 billion. You know, I don't know. But I mean, what we're seeing right now, I just don't think is feasible. Because I just, you know, but who knows? I mean, maybe by that point, it's even more money. Because all that really matters is who's out there, what their resources are, and what they're willing to pay. And, you know, we don't even have any idea what kind of companies are going to be around. I assume there'll be an opt-out in this deal for the NBA at 2029, 2030, 2031, who knows? And who knows what companies will be ascended? I mean, reasonably sure Disney will still be around and Comcast. But like I said, I mean, these AI companies, did we really think the streamers would get to this level? This, you know, well, yeah, but if you went back 15 years and said the streamers would get to this level, people would not believe you. It'll be very interesting to see how things go.
All right. We definitely got off on a bit of a tangent there. Started with the NBA Finals. Started talking about a little bit of the NBA media rights stuff. It's hard to avoid right now. But let's move on to the Stanley Cup Final. To me, something... It's a series that, you know, despite having the Florida Panthers, is a little more interesting to me than the NBA Finals, just given that Edmonton's in it and you have, you know, the star power on that team. So, John, what's your, like, baseline expectation for this series? Obviously not great on paper, but when you look into it a little bit more, it is, you know, there's some attractiveness there.
It's not the worst matchup, but it obviously will be very low by ABC standards. I do think viewership will be up from last year when all the games were on cable, but I think the viewership will be closer to last year on cable than to 2 years ago on ABC when it was Colorado-Tampa Bay. I do think that Edmonton being there is not a bad thing. It'd be nice if they were playing New York and not Florida. Yeah. I think for the NHL, the value of this series is in Canada. The NHL only has 25 American teams. When you think of it that way, it's not the same kind of American league that the NBA and baseball and the NFL are. They've only got 25 American teams. The NBA last had 25 teams in like 1987 or something, right? So, you know, the reality is that for the NHL, Canadian viewership matters. And it matters, you know, not as a PR talking point, although it will be used as such, but it matters from a business perspective. And so, okay. Would Florida Dallas have been better for ABC? Probably, maybe. I'm not sure. No one really has the Dallas Stars are not an attractive team. But certainly, yeah, any benefit you had from having an American market in Dallas over Edmonton is totally wiped out by the fact that Edmonton will be massive for Rogers in Canada. So to me, that was the best case scenario once the Rangers were knocked out, was to get Edmonton in. Because Rangers Stars is still the best because it's New York. You at least have that. But to me, the NHL is not unhappy. ABC might be unhappy, but the NHL is not unhappy.
Yeah, that's probably a great way to put it. I want to talk a little bit about scheduling, because obviously, you know, they're scheduled on nights to avoid the NBA Finals. So they're getting, you know, two Saturdays in the first four games, and then Monday and Thursday in between, right? So obviously the weeknight games, those are fine. Saturday, a little bit less of a draw traditionally, but this is what the NHL just has to deal with, right? This is normal for them. Do you think that will have any impact on the ratings? The fact that, A, you've got one Canadian team, the American team is the Florida Panthers, and then we're starting this series on Saturday.
Well, I mean, the Saturday, that's just normal for the NHL. They're always going to get the short end of the stick with that. Saturday nights are not great. And it's just hard to schedule around the NBA because the NBA puts two off days for travel, which actually works out well for the NHL because you're going from Florida to Edmonton. It's very long. So they need those 2 days off. But, Saturday's not ideal, but it is what it is. This is the way it is for the NHL. And again, I just don't think the American ratings are, you know, the American ratings are going to be what they are. And just to be clear, I'm going to report the ABC numbers. I will probably mention the Canadian numbers just because I know people are going to get on my case if I don't, based on what happened when the Raptors were in the NBA finals. But I only write about U.S. ratings, really. And so to me, you know, the series is going to do probably fairly not great numbers here. I do think it'll be up, though. I actually think you're going to see press releases from Danny T and ESPN because the numbers are going to be up. Last year set a really low bar. I don't think a single game got 3 million. And I think every game, maybe not every, but most of the games should at least get 3 million in this series. It's McDavid, it's Draisaitl. And it could go, if it goes 7 or something and they're playing great, at that point, market size doesn't matter because you have two superstars.
Yeah. All right, John. Good discussion on NBA, NHL. Of course, we had to talk about the nonsense going on ESPN at the top of the show, but it's a slower time in the sports media world right now. Once we get those NBA rights deals, we'll have something pretty important to talk about. But until then, this is what we got. So hey, good show today.
Yeah, well, we'll be back next week talking the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Final, and more. WNBA season is 3 weeks old and doesn't end until October. Now, the Fever will be done by September, but that's a long way off. We got many more weeks of this to go. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.